from the Fallah saddle where he'd been supervising his army's assembly, flinging himself from his horse and bawling, "See! See! To Wudros! They are in our hands!" He was an old pal of Theodore's, all ceremony forgotten. "Let us go, in God's name! We have them! We have them!" If Theodore had been a smarter soldier as Gabri, well, we might have had a disaster to rank with a Sandalwana or Maiwand. But he hesitated, thank God, and lost the chance. And since it all happened with such speed, so many different factors together, I'd better take time to explain. The march up the spur and the Ifitchu Plateau to Aragi had taken longer than expected, thanks to the broiling heat, the steepness of the climb, and the fact that they didn't think they were marching to battle, but merely to sites to pitch camp. Napier wasn't expecting an ab attack, and got too far forward, in my opinion, and the baggage column had easier going on the King's Road, and likewise arrived too quickly in an exposed position. Feyre got the blame. Justly or not, I can't say. If Theodore had allowed Gabri to attack at once, the baggage column was done for, and that might have spelled disaster. I say might, because Napier was a complete hand when it came to improvising, as he was about to show. Well, Theodore hesitated to cast the dice, with Gabri pleading to be let loose. Not long, perhaps, but I reckon long enough before he cried, "Go, then!" Gabri was off like a shot, waving his scarf to advance the army, and Theodore yelled to the gunners to fire. The German workmen had been measuring the charges, but the ab gunners manned the pieces, and the first salvo almost caught Napier himself, a chain shot landing a few yards behind him. And by then he'd had another nasty start, as the whole crest from Fallah to Selassie suddenly came to life with 7,000 ab infantry, rolling down to Aragi like a black-and-white tide, bellowing their war songs and bidding fair to sweep away the sappers screening Napier's knoll, who had only muzzle-loading brown bears to stem the flood. And to the right, the baggage column, caught in the open and barely guarded, must be engulfed by the savage legions bearing down on it. I thank God in that moment that I was watching that charge from behind and not from in front of it, for it must have been a sight to freeze the blood, those great robe figures racing down in a chanting mass almost a mile from wing to wing, sickle swords and spears flourished, black shields to the fore, braids and robes flying, and out in front old Gabri, sabre aloft, his brilliant red silk cloak billowing behind him, the 500 scarlet-clad cavalry chieftains at his back. From above, it looked like the discharge from an overturned anthill spilling across the plain towards an enemy caught unprepared by the sheer speed of the attack. That was when Bob Napier earned his peerage. He had a couple of minutes' grace, and in that time he had the King's Own, who'd been hurrying towards the sound of the guns, skirmishing past him to join the sapper screen, and in behind the khaki figures I saw the dark Pujiris of the Baloch. As they deployed, waiting for the onslaught, Napier opened up with the naval brigade rocket batteries, which he'd called up to a point just behind his knoll. In a moment, the white trails of smoke were crisscrossing the plain, the rockets smashing into the ab ranks, cutting furrows through them. They wavered and checked, appalled at this terrible new weapon they'd never seen before. But then they came on again, full tilt through the pouring rain. The King's Own stood fast, and on the word, 300 Sniders let fly in a devastating volley that blew the red-coated horsemen's charge to pieces and staggered the infantry mass behind them. Why they didn't run then and there, I can't fathom. The rockets must have been terror enough, but now they were meeting rapid-fire breech-loaders for the first time. Yet still they came on until the Sniders and the Enfields of the Baloch stopped them in their tracks, and they gave back, firing their double-barreled muskets as they went and being shot down as they tried to find cover among the rocks and scrub oaks. The King's Own advanced steadily, a mounted officer, who I guess was Cameron, keeping them in hand. Still the Abs retreated and died, but they never ran. And I guess my time there must have made me an old Abyssinian hand, for I find myself writing Bayete Habesh on their behalf. There, it's written. In their shoes, I'd not have stopped running till Magdala. While this was happening, Theodore was pounding away with his Fallah battery, which I realized was unlikely to damage anyone. The chain shot that almost did for Napier must have been a great fluke. But on the right, the baggage of the 2nd Brigade was in mortal peril. The right wing of the Abcharge was thundering down on it, the spearmen singing like Welshmen, careless of the shells bursting above them from the guns of the mountain train formed up on the King's Road ahead of the baggage. Our guns were flanked by the Punjabi.